Stay tuned for Visionary Activist.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So, at the waxing of the moon, the waxing of the full moon, there's a full moon tomorrow night, a lunar eclipse. And a lunar eclipse is, it'll be dark, it'll be rising, well, it'll be at 4:33, but as the moon rises, ooh, it'll be darker than usual. Because a lunar eclipse is a precise full moon where the sun projects the Earth's shadow onto the moon, so we see shadow. Ooh, howdy. Whoa. So, many things, all of life we want to weave together, and I want to do an honoring of my cat who went backstage into the backstage mystery on Monday night, Dr. Wu Kathmandu, for the medicine he offered when he grew into a giant, massive cat. He was bullying all the other cats in a terrible way, and so I took him aside and massaged him, and he had this great purr going, rum, 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 and I go, you are such a guy. You are such a guy. You are strong enough to be gentle. Yes, you are. Rum, 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 rum. And he became the defender of the weak, and those he had oppressed, he became their protector and their nurse and comfort when they were dying. And also, let it be known throughout the multiverses that Dr. Wu Kathmandu, before he died in his final months, he made friends with a coyote, and we go, oh, good medicine out there. So we honor everything. We honor everything. There's so much brewing and so much that wants our dedicated magic and prayers. But a big thank you, of course, to Elizabeth Warren. She was warned. She was given an explanation, and nevertheless, she persisted. And we go, yes, absolutely, that's great. Next week's guest we will be dedicating to Standing Rock, and we want to weave everything, all, everything is woven together now. And a quote, Bob Goff sends this quote from Noam Chomsky. If you assume there's no hope, you guarantee there will be no hope. If you assume that there is an instinct for freedom, then there are opportunities to change things. Then there is a possibility that you can contribute to making a better world. Thank you, Noam, up in your upbeat self. You know, and Bob Goff says, climate change is inevitable. Adaptation is optional. They go, ah. So we know that Dapple drilling permission was given. I want to do a shout out to wonderful council member on my shift course, Liberating Citizen Trickster. You can still enroll. We convene next Wednesday. You can find out more about that at coyotenetworknews.com. But, you know, my councilmate Wendy Botwin, synchronicity draws us all together, you know, invited in Peter Warshall. And I go, Peter Warshall, I love him, a late great ancestor, such an effective advocate for sane reverence and protection in the world. And, you know, all the ancestors, the animals, the plants, the humans we admire, you know, we want to bring it all in. He certainly understood, you know, colonialism as the sneaky form of all crimes against nature, climate change as intensified colonialism. So, you know, No Dapple Last Stand Call to Action put out, you know, Tuesday, February 7th, the U.S. Army Corps gave notice of intent to grant the final easement for the Dakota Access Pipeline to cross the Missouri River, Minnesota. They are skipping the environmental impact statement. Gold star for using impact in the correct way, a short, violent, and destructive encounter. They are skipping the environmental impact statement in December and skipping congressional notification period required by law. Outlaws. But again, the call to action, the Indigenous Coalition at Standing Rock is calling for an International Day of Emergency Actions. We don't know quite when that, but soon, stand by. Think long-term movement building. We are in this for the long haul. We are calling for emergency actions all over the world. We encourage groups across the globe to connect our prayers for the water with other fights against tyranny and the domination of people and Mother Earth. All of that. And we go, yes, okay, that's perfect. So next week, we will be hosting Tricia Van Cleveren, and who a wonderful filmmaker, and Phyllis Young. And just briefly, they are the Standing Rock Nation Film Festival. And it says, the idea came 2 years ago when a young woman said to Phyllis Young, "Why has no one told me you were, and that you were involved with the American Indian Movement? I want to know who I am. Your brother was Russell Means. This is my people." And Phyllis said, "I want to impress upon the youth Native American images of who we can be, that they can be digital heroes, digital stars, that they can create digital smoke signals, and more wonderful, powerful, good things that we will be hosting next week." So, yes. So, more than perfectly, salam, shalom, peace is not the absence of war, but the presence of one, saith our guest, Deborah Felmuth, whom we welcome today to file scouting reports of defiant joy, having returned from her home in Syria, where she was for 3 months at the end of last year, her beloved home. She is the author of the beautiful book of photographs, Syria, Remember Me. The website is syria-remember-me.com. Really gorgeous. And what she writes, "The visual images of turmoil in Syria are all too evident in today's mass media as news and political machinations instill a culture of fear, wittingly or unwittingly. And shockingly, few images of the cultural diversity, history, and beauty of the Syrian people can be found." So, welcome, welcome, ally, marhaba habibti, Deborah Felmuth.
Thank you so much. What a beautiful introduction. And I also, as you say, welcome, welcome, and you say marhaba. For those listening, marhaba is a simple hi. It's a hello. It's hello, hello. And saying marhabtain means two hellos, because they have this wonderful thing in the Arabic language where you can say anything in the singular and anything in the plural, but you also have a dual tense, so you can have two of anything, which is just something adorable. So two hellos. But the real translation of welcome into Arabic is pure poetry. So ahlan wa sahlan is what we say in Arabic when we want to invite someone into the home. Ahlan wa sahlan, or into the listening home, or into wherever you might be right now. Ahlan comes from the word family, so it means like family. And sahlan comes from the root of the word, which means a wide open meadow or level ground, a wide open playing field. So it means please come in like family and on level ground. A great way to say welcome, welcome, hello. And you can be certain that were you magically, instantly, beautifully able to transport yourself to Syria at this moment, there would be thousands, hundreds of thousands, nay, millions of Syrians who would say to you, ahlan wa sahlan, and invite you in with great welcome.
Yes. Again, we want to cross-pollinate, as you are such a great ambassador of that intimacy, intimacy weaving, intimacy of people and beings and life. What you often, people who just want to live their lives forget the, well, not forget, but underneath, kin to the earth, and we put the complex politics sometimes to one side, or as a second thing, as you are so good at. But you said, what a good lead-in. Again, all stories lead us to all stories. So water in Syria.
Well, yes, and all honor to those at Standing Rock, those who are present actually physically on the land, and those who from afar lend their strength, their prayers, and in many cases their actions, whether it be via saying, okay, so we've had another setback, that does not mean we are defeated, and we will act. All honor to them, and it reminds me of this, actually several beautiful threads in Syrian culture and in present day history, as well as ancient history. So culturally, one of the things that I'm looking at right here on my wall is a beautifully painted, and it's kind of got raised work. So it's a piece of wood, but it has raised plaster on it in a very specific technique that they do on lots of walls and even ceilings in Syria. And then the calligraphy flows through the design of this and is painted in a separate color. And it says, Allah Nur Samawat Wal Arid. And this is, God is the light of the heavens and the earth. And the second thing it says underneath is, Waja'alna min al-ma'at kullu shay'an hay. Everything living comes from the water. So we have the heaven and the earth and the water. And this is Islamic culture, this is Arabic culture. And it's Christian, ancient Christian culture. The waters which still feed that incredibly arid, barren in some places, dry desert land, are waters that we know well, the Tigris and the Euphrates River, for example, but there's also others. The Orontes, which flows very disobediently north rather than south, which is, you know, it's one of these wonderful rivers that goes, wait, how can you do that? Why are you going that direction? And it means the backwards river. Mm. So recently, I think it was about the 23rd, the 20th, somewhere really close to Christmas of December, the rebels who were about 12 miles outside of Damascus took the spring of Ain al-Fijay, and they cut the water supply to Damascus. And, of course, this was a time, first of all, of holiday. Second of all, a time of cold. Yes, even in Syria, they've had some snow this winter. And a time in which I suppose there isn't any good time to have your water cut. But this was a time which was extremely difficult. One of the things that I realized when I talked to people who were living through this difficulty was that their ability to sort of link arms and figure out how to cooperatively, collaboratively increase their own comfort. I mean, you can't live without water. So it was a matter of life and death. It was skyrocketing. They got together in ways that just really boggled my mind in order to share and to ration in very, 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 very positive ways. And this is what I pray for this country at this time, that we cooperatively, collaboratively, and creatively go forward. We've got an awful lot right now that we are facing that needs creative response. And this leads me to ask you about, you know, where's Venus? Where's Mars in all of this right now? I know I saw them last week in the sky, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, so bright.
No, they still are. They still are, and they're getting married. Let's bring them in. But, you know, what you were saying is so crucial. I was overhearing just a fragment of a TED Talk, somebody talking about, I didn't catch which country, but he said in many countries there's a word for the quality of genius and ingenuity that comes out of scarcity. And he said, in that way, America is really impoverished. And he said, in a lot of countries, they go, oh, you need to charge your cell phone. Well, here's some string and a bicycle, and here we got... and so I just want to honor that part of wealth, the ingenuity that is rising. And indeed, what's rising due east in California right now is Uranus, the trickster at 21 plus Aries, whose image is the gateway to the garden of all desired things. And as you delineate, you know, in our life conversations and in the call that you were on Monday, you know, and we were talking about Aleppo in the spring, and you said, yeah, in Arab households, you know, all many families living there, but face into the courtyard, there's water, and then water runs through each room, so you can, you're never far from running water, and it's like, oh, that's what...
Right, and this is in Aleppo, the place that you're speaking of is a place called Bimaristan, which is one of the oldest examples of a mental health facility in the world. Right. And so here it was a place where one would go. These were not places to which you were admitted. They were places you could go. I mean, I hesitate to call it a spa, but it's closer to that idea, in that what you were given when you were there was soothing for your frayed nerves, your tired mind, and your let's call it the tremors of any kind of imbalance that might be in your psyche. And so each room would face the courtyard, and the fountain could be visible, but also there were these little channels that would run through each room. So the water, the sound of the water trickling, was found to be one of the most powerful healing therapies that one could do. And it puts me in mind also of a poem that I'd like to read to you. This is by Mahmoud Darwish, and he's a Lebanese poet, author of many, many beautiful, beautiful writings. And this one is called, I think it's called Think of Others. I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure it's called that. Mahmoud Darwish. As you prepare your breakfast, think of others. Don't forget to feed the pigeons. As you conduct your wars, think of others. Don't forget those who want peace. As you pay your water bill, think of others. Think of those who only have clouds to drink from. As you go home, your own home, think of others. Don't forget those who live in tents. As you sleep and count the planets, think of others. There are people who have no place to sleep. As you liberate yourself with metaphors, think of others, those who have lost their right to speak. And as you think of distant others, think of yourself and say, I wish I were a candle in the darkness.
Perfect. That's so beautiful.
Yeah.
We're all in this dream together, and it does all tie, you know, when you ask about the sky story and the poem Perfect, Think of Others, and like our friend Naomi Shihab Nye's poem Kindness, the waters of life, we're all in this dream. So Venus and Mars that we get to see so bright after sunset, Venus blazing like a train lamp and Mars like, hello, I'm here too. But they journeyed through the watery realms of Pisces, picking up Neptune dreams, vision, dedication to water, reverie, trance, intimacy, compassion, all of that, that we're all in the, you know, the amniotic ocean of one dream. And then they journeyed out of Pisces to be Aries, to be advocates for the dream, the beauty, the power, the kinship, the water. And that's where they are right now. And it's, you know, Mars is leading, Mars is protecting beauty, and Venus is protecting the protectors. You know, and it's like, whoa. And so think of that when you see that. There's a sky-earth story, as humans have done for, 20,000 years anyway. You know, it doesn't require believing anything. It requires participating in the choreography of creation, going, look how beautiful, and what it is, it's guiding us to sane reverence at this cuckoo time. Yes.
And I love it that you've placed it in the realm of advocacy, too, that they're advocates.
Yeah.
Right? Because right now, what I think, sometimes people ask me, you know, so what, we read all of this stuff about Syria, what can we do? Because there's a genuine human, automatic, I would hope almost, response saying, wow, something terrible is going on, what can we do? And yet, in many cases, we're given no outlets. And so advocacy is an interesting word, and one of the things that I want to advocate for right here and now, and always, is education. And so it's a multi-pronged education. If you take it back to the Latin, I think it means to lead out. You know, in other words, it's educere. And so it's to bring out into the open and to bring up into consciousness many, many different things. And so in some way, it might be finding out about something, and you're good at helping us find out about the sky story and relate it to, wait, when we're not alone in this, this is happening in the sky and this is happening on the earth plane, and how are they interwoven? Might be finding out, might be reading my book and saying, oh, wow, I didn't know that about the Syrian people. It might be advocating for assistance literally to education in the country of Syria. One of the tragedies is that there is a whole generation, or at least a half of one there, whose schooling has been so radically disrupted. And in the cases of the places where ISIS has, or Daesh has, taken over, the education has been completely denied to portions of the population, and very often to the girls. And so we, you know, there's a wry kind of a joke that goes through some circles, and it's one of these things you only joke about it because it's so painful that you have to, and that is like, yep, we're being bombed back to the Stone Age, or we're being taken back to the Stone Age, is something that, you know, I've heard people in Syria say, like, they just want us to go backwards. What's moving us forward? Education. When we understand, when we are given the materials that we need to learn to appreciate. And so sometimes when I talk to people in this country who have only read a headline here or there or seen an image of destruction, I spend a lot of time saying, actually, there's a lot of really good stuff going on in Syria right now. You know, so that's a matter of education. And this is where I want to be an advocate right now. I think when Tulsi Gabbard, the good senator from Hawaii, went to Syria in the first week of January, she was going on an educational trip. She was going on a fact finding. She said, I'm a senator. I'm actually being asked to vote on things which are affecting the Syrian people. And yet, she herself felt, I don't know. So she went to Aleppo. She went to Damascus. She interviewed many, many people. And please go to her website and give her a little love, because she did something really strong, sensible, and brave in that she didn't wait for anybody, because she wasn't doing anything wrong. And yet now she is facing the backlash of many of her fellow congressmen and the House Ethics Committee. So it is shameful that we are not allowed to educate ourselves without without fear of some kind of retribution here. So,
right.
so go to Tulsi Gabbard. She was smart, and she put forth in Congress, in the Senate, a bill that I think was in early December. It was before she went to Syria, and it was called the Stop Arming Terrorists Act. And I cheered when I heard that. It didn't have any initials, numbers, or people's names that I didn't know what it was supposed to be talking about. It said what it meant: stop arming terrorists.
And then we could tease that into stop arming everyone, but that's part two.
Yes. Well,
that's part two.
Right, and yet, I mean, I don't even really want to go there right now. I do want to stop arming the terrorists, because the other one, I think there's a lot more debate that is justified. And this one, I don't think there's any debate.
But
stop arming terrorists.
But I do have to, I had an inhalation of breath when you were like, education. I go, some trickster genius is serendipitously syncretizing us, because I just got a message from another great ally in my liberating citizen trickster council, Shift Network. You can join, coyotenetworknews.com. But she had just messaged me, beautiful Marinda Dislin, going, I'm helping raise money for Connect Teach, which was started in Turkey. Or actually, I'm going to get this slightly wrong, Montessori teacher. And when Turkey opens up in April, we'll go to large refugee camps and begin training teachers to teach, teachers to teach people. It's been successfully done in India and Uganda, and we're feeling so much better about, starting these education programs in Turkey for Syrian refugees. And I go, oh, it's all, you know, and I just want to do a shout out that the many ways to gather, I love our dedicated listenership and hooting and everything, but, But the councils online, the liberating citizen trickster that I'm convening is full of really great humans, really, again, advocates for beauty in a world, and agents, aspiring agents of cool response in a hot, reactive circumstance. That's what we're working on.
Excellent. And there's another one in northern Lebanon, also for Syrian refugees. You can find it online, Relief and Reconciliation.
Oh, great.
And that they run some really good schools. They are doing some really good things educationally, because this is the gift. This is the gift that we want to give all the time. I've been in recently a private school here in Vermont that is kindergarten through eighth grade, and I've had two of the most enchanting afternoons with these children who are being given the opportunity to really ask all the questions that they want to ask. And boy, are they smart, and boy, have they already learned a lot about Syria. They've just, there's no holds barred. And this past week, when I went in, and one of the fifth graders raised her hand, and she said, okay, so our president, Donald Trump, has made an executive order, and now no Syrians can come here. And then it just hung in the air like that, and I was looking at her, and I was nodding my head and going, yeah, okay, this is what you understand so far. And I just looked at her, I said, is there a question? And then she just went, how big is that?
Mm.
And I thought, oh, sweetheart, what? Yes, what a good question. How big is that? And I think everyone in the world right now is having an appreciation of how big that is. And thank you for that, for letting it be that big that we can all, inshallah, God willing, cooperatively, collaboratively, and creatively solve this really, really cantankerous problem that we're up against.
And we're going to go to our beautiful musical break in a minute or two. But but also, you know, the conversations we've had since you got back recently from Syria, we want to the defiant joy, the beauty that you've been weaving, the yoga and qigong classes that people attend, and then maybe just to say what your friend Lena did, and then guide us into the Aleppo song.
Yeah, okay, great. My trip there was to an apartment that my husband and I, and he is Syrian, we own in the old city of Damascus, and it was to see family and be with friends, but I was teaching Qigong, yoga, meditation, music. We were really deeply dropping into meditative and peace creating. As Caroline quoted, Salam, one of the 99 names of God, isn't the absence of war, but the presence of oneness. It's a unity consciousness. And so this is deeply where we were, and then trying to say, okay, how can we let this light up ourselves and light, you know, really shed light on in the darkest places, the places who, and the people who want to divide. And I just got to say that there's a terrifically powerful community of people who live in Syria whom you would love to know. And they are not Daesh. They are not ISIS. You know, I don't want to meet those people either. I'm sorry to say, I am afraid of their indoctrination, and I'm sad for them. But boy, are there millions of people who are just like you and I, and they're the ones who are doing this work and saying, nope, we're still here, and we're holding it together, and we are not going to either flee or give up. They are in many ways like the water protectors at Standing Rock. We're not fleeing, we're not giving up, and we've got more work to do. And that's what it is. So I know that you want us to go into a song, and I don't know how soon it is, but it's
in one minute-ish. We're going to have a sort of long musical break at our halfway.
Well, great. This is a song that that comes from Aleppo, and it comes from a tradition called Wesha. And so the tradition of Moshahat is, it is a classical, you could call it a classical tradition, and yet it's also folk. In other words, it uses very beautiful poetry. And this one, I will tell you, has to do with the rising of a moon, a full moon, and the seeing of one another in the moonlight near the tent, and then not being satisfied with just a glimpse, but wanting more. And then there's also a beautiful verse that has to do with salt. And I love the image of salt. Salt is the thing that, you know, we just need a little salt on the food. It's what makes things sweeter. It's what makes it, that was just what it needed. And salt in the earth, and there's a lot of biblical references to salt, but there's also the phrase in Arabic that has to do with sharing bread and salt. Yani akalna hubs umelh. We have shared.
We must go to our
bread and salt. It means we can trust each other.
We can trust each other, and you can wrap us on the other end of this beautiful song. This is the Visionary Activist Show. Our wonderful guest is Deborah Falmouth. I'm Caroline Casey, and here we go into blessings of salt and the rising full moon. From our beautiful musical reverie from Aleppo. This is the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, and our wonderful ally guest back from Syria, her beloved home, is Deborah Falmouth. Yes, I did interrupt you on your beautiful salt homage, if you want to return to that.
Well, I do want to return to that, because that was actually a different song.
Oh.
So this is, what we have just heard is much older than the song that I described. And even though I had described the Moshahat from Aleppo as being a classical tradition, and maybe we'll hear that one later in the program, I don't know. This one actually comes from an older tradition and is in the language of Syriac.
Ah, we got them reversed. Okay, that's right.
That's okay. And Syriac is the ancient Syrian language. It's a branch of Aramaic, which was the language that Christ spoke. Aramaic is still spoken in a few places in Syria. And Syriac is still used in the Orthodox Christian Syrian Orthodox Christian tradition. So Syriac is a very, very old language, and that's what we just heard. And so I wish I could tell you what that one means, but I don't speak Syriac.
No, that's great. But it allows us, in the fullness of our next 23 minutes, to feel where we want the Aleppo song to be.
Great.
I'm pretty sure we can do that. Hello.
And it allows me to actually go back. One of the things that you referenced earlier on, when you were talking about, it's, you know, we are faced with times of change, and really what our question is what's the adaptation?
That's Bob Goff. Yeah, that's Bob Goff just saying climate.
Amen to Bob Goff, then, yeah. Because really that's the only question we have, is how are we going to adapt to this?
Yeah.
And so when we look back to the ancestors, and in Syria, we have a long tradition to look back at, and that's the beauty of it, that we can look not just for centuries, but for a millennium, and look at how has this culture changed, and how has it stayed its course, even in times of extreme distress or conflict, such as the one it is undergoing right now. And so, I mean, I ask that of us in this culture, but I speak of it in that culture and say that we have a long, long road ahead of us, as well as behind us. And here's a place I just want to speak about our concepts of past and future for a second. Normally, I would be in front of you. So I want you just to imagine now, if we were standing together or sitting together in the same room, that if I said to you, let's go into the future, where would we all point? We would point straight ahead, right? Onward, let's go. However, in Arabic culture, the future is behind us, because it's that which we do not know. It is, so just put your hands behind your head. It's like, oh, that's the future. That's what's coming. We can't quite get a hold of it, right? And then gesture to the front of you, gesture out in front, and know that you are following in the caravan tracks of your ancestors. So that's the past. We follow the past. And so we've got this beautiful, image even of, wait, there are many ways to think about things. That's why adaptation is possible.
Right. Yeah. No, many ways. And again, you know, I like to deeply delve and explore that the oppressor is actually seeking, unwittingly, the medicine of what he or she oppresses.
Yeah.
You know, and that American culture, driving here, pondering our conversing, I go, well, we've elected the Inquisition here, and we've elected the least informed, most ignorant people of the least informed, most ignorant culture, America, about complexity. And exactly what the Middle East offers, which is complexity and perspective and manners and greetings of strangers and irony, you know, all of the, and beautiful food, and the poker, the blessing poker that we've created, make a well for you, make a even more wonderfully for you, make a well. The day woven in reciprocal blessing, and how this is so much what we all need, the waters.
Waters. Yeah. So, there are so many questions, and I want to go back just a little bit and talk about my time in Syria and say, one of the things that I did while I was in Syria was walk around a lot. I just wanted to have my feet on the ground and to see people and to feel what it was that they were facing. And while I was only in Damascus, I did not get to travel around the country, and I wasn't really there long enough to do so, because I was working while I was there. But in Damascus, what I found was that life is stronger than any negativity. In other words, even if there were times where you could hear the sounds of war, which might have been gunshot, might have been mortar shells, or might have been jets, all three of which I did hear, those things, while they might in a brief moment send a chill of like, whoa, wait, where? We're overwhelmingly trumped by beauty and by activity and by, no, I'm going out and I'm going. This leads me, you reminded me of the story of Lena.
Yeah.
And that was a friend of mine, and I called her on New Year's Day and said, Happy New Year. And she said, oh, Happy New Year to you. May everything in this year be good for you, and may all things be white. And this is, you know, the tradition is you cook a white food. So, you know, we might cook mashed potatoes, I suppose, but they cook hot yogurt dishes. So delicious, so delicious. And she said, yeah, we had a great time last night. We had a party, and we went dancing till probably about 4 o'clock in the morning. And we danced out all of our sadness, and we danced out all of our rage, and we danced out all of our happiness. And then we were so exhausted that we had to come home. So that was a beautiful thing, because she didn't just stop with, yeah, we danced out the negativity.
Mm-hmm.
We danced out all of the, we were like, yes, we were joyous as we did these things. So life for her, for this whole group of people, is the strength. We go on, we change, we adapt, we advocate. And again, I want to say, I'm just in love with the words, you know, collaboratively and creatively.
Right. And we do want a plethora of words. We call fight, but it's so used, right? And resist even has a French beret on it, because you're resisting against something. It's like, okay, but as we amplify possibilities, you know, so instead of fight, we can dance, we can collaborate. You know, even at the fantastic Women's March, and it's not going away, it's bubbling up in many forms, you know, but there was like, we want you to support these people's long fight. It's like, I want to support their influential dedication. You know, I just want to expand that thing and, you know, resist, you know, easy, you know, even the banners all around the world resist with such ingenuity, drop from cranes and in crowds, you know, a bright good thing. But I love also seeing them shapeshift into protect.
Right.
Into protect.
Protect. You know. Even defend, okay? Mm-hmm. Or encourage.
Encourage.
And create.
Yeah, well, or many words. Or, you know, if you love resist, keep it in there, but give it some company. And, you know, if you're addicted to fight, you know, keep it in there, but give it some things to dance with. So it's not just Mars. And that's also the strategy, again, of what we all add to the brew. You know, I'd like to throw the word against into the cauldron just for a rest. Just for a rest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the art of peace, the dancing, the spiral. The you never know, the invitation to the Renaissance, you know, going, no, you're saying reverence, that's crazy, but come on over here, you know, so that we really, so our whole team of good-hearted people, you know, yes, critique, and then magnetizing, bless the story,
or,
you know, right this way.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know whether you're ready to listen to another song or not,
but
I would almost like to introduce the Aleppo song.
Perfect.
Which we talked a little bit about before, and say, yes, the blessing of bread and salt and the rising of the full moon, but I'm going to read another poem, if I might, before it, because it is that call to do exactly what you're saying, which is creatively get out there and protect, add your weight to that which it is that we want to see in the world. And it's by Naomi Shihab Nye, our beautiful Palestinian-American friend who lives in Texas. And it's called Cross That Line. Paul Robeson stood on the northern border of the USA and sang into Canada, where a vast audience sat on folding chairs waiting to hear him. He sang into Canada. His voice left the USA when his body was not allowed to cross that line. Remind us again, brave friend, what countries may we sing into? What lines should we all be crossing? What songs travel toward us from far away to deepen our days? And now, a song from Aleppo. That's a faraway and beautiful song about bread and salt, meaning wisdom and trust, Those are the elements that when we share bread and salt, it knows that we can trust each other and that we make our wisdom available to each other.
Hmm.
Visionary Activist Show. I'm Caroline Casey. Our wonderful guest is Deborah Falmouth, and that was a beautiful song from Aleppo. And what unites us is, we say, music wafts our prayers into the memosphere, the effective realm of group mind. May we all be public dreamers, and the music there, and you know, protecting the protectors of beauty and sane reverence. And before I toss it back to you, Deborah, can I just bring in Pope Francis for a moment?
Sure.
Yeah, protecting the protectors of beauty and sane reverence. When we began this show in California, the midheaven, the point overhead, was 16-plus Pisces, which has a beautiful metaphor. Its image is rich and poor alike pour out onto rain-drenched streets in a joyous rebirth celebration. And that's Pope Francis's Saturn. He really is dedicated to that. And the image for his Mars is Robin Hood, right? And so Pope Francis has enemies now. Trump is an enemy. The Vatican's a spooky kind of Kremlin when you have enemies. And there are Trump allies in the Vatican. We go, and may we all release our infantile addiction to having an enemy. Mm. You know, and I just want us to protect the Pope Francis part of the team, just because there we go. And then and now back to you, Deborah, if you want to guide us out of that beautiful song.
Yeah. Excellent. And I couldn't agree more. I think he's quite marvelously creative and even a little bit sneaky. He's like, wow, I didn't know that a pope could do that and say that, and then he says it. I love it. And I just want to bring in that the very last word of the song that she sang, Aman, 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 means protection.
Oh.
And so she's the very end of the song, and I had no idea that that's what it was going to be. But, yeah, it has to do with the sense of creating this it's safe for all of us is what it means. It's not just protecting what I want. It means it's making it better for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the crucial element that I think we have to, you know, we have to look at the elements here, there, anywhere that are, as you said, addicted maybe. Did you use that word, addicted to negativity or divisiveness?
Well, addicted to having an enemy.
Addicted to having an enemy, that was it.
Would we all be willing to throw that into the cauldron?
Wouldn't we? Boy, I would be. I hope I can completely do that.
Well, no, fortunately we don't have to. We just throw it into the cauldron and the divine gods take care of the rest.
Amen.
All they want from us is a willingness to experiment with throwing it into the cauldron.
Well, there's something else I'd like to throw into the cauldron.
Yeah.
This kind of goes back to the moment where, you know, people say to me, well, what can we do about Syria? What do we do? So, yes, absolutely. Talk to your elected representatives because they are actually voting on things which are really underreported. Something... I don't know how many weeks ago, but it was before Trump's inauguration, and it has not come into the House yet, but it was in the Senate, and it had to do with sending more weapons to Syria, which is just a bad idea, and B, morally reprehensible, really, just to think that you can drop weapons into someone else's country. And these were to be shoulder-fired missiles that can take down aircraft. So, yeah, find out from your representatives whether that's true, whether that's up for a vote. And no. Just say no.
Remind them what a bad idea that is.
That's a really bad idea, you know. The other thing is to ask about sanctions. I think a lot of Americans don't realize how strict the sanctions against Syria are right now. And this is a place where I think we can exert some pressure. It remains to be seen how this executive branch is going to deal with Syria. But, I mean, I don't even want to go there. It remains to be seen is all I'm going to say right now.
It's beyond the pay grade of American mental complexity. wherever you want to take us, I trust you. But, well, what are the sanctions right now?
Well, many of them have to do, of course, with supplies which might have multiple uses. And this is the problem. Something that might be useful to the military would be sanctioned, but it might also be useful to the medical community, for instance. And this is why sanctions get so complicated. You're saying, okay, but we want to deny the Syrian government the ability to X, Y, or Z. And, I need to segue here and say because I've had a lot of questions in the last 48 hours. An Amnesty International report came out saying 13,000, you know, hangings in a Syrian prison. It said Naya. And what I really just want to say to that is, I'm sorry, it's not true. Now, you can say, well, that's all fine and good, Deborah, but how do you know that? What I would most recommend is read a post by Moon of Alabama. It's a strange name, I know, but he's an ex-military American, very well-researched in his responses. So that would be my suggestion. He gives all of the technical reasons why this is a propagandized report. Why there is a propagandized report coming out of Amnesty International, I can't answer. But it has disturbed a lot of people here in my neighborhood who have said, really, is this possible? And I said, no. Well, of course, anything's possible, but did it happen? No. I'm here to say no, it didn't happen.
And always we go to the oneness default, too. May anything up to no good be revealed, rendered harmless. But also, you know, whatever is not good, you know, and also to invite in, you know, whatever is truly best for everyone, come on in, even when we don't know.
Yeah.
Right. And we wonder.
Well, and it takes us back to, you know, which wolf do you want to feed?
Oh, no, I hate that story. And I think it's a colonial dingbat story.
Well, at its root, I don't think it is.
Well, which wolf do we want to feed? No, starving. I'm concerned citizens for more life-enhancing metaphors. I think it's a colonial metaphor. But anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt you exactly. But what do we encourage? I mean, I did a little bit, but what do we want to encourage?
Same deal. What do we want to encourage?
Yeah.
And so
that doesn't require killing something. Anyway, now keep going.
Okay, so exactly, what do we want to encourage and what do we choose to put into our consciousness?
And to cultivate. What
sometimes to I say, if you had a friend who was critically ill, and Syria is critically ill right now, if you had a friend who was critically ill, you would be hoping that the doctors were doing their darndest. You'd hope their very best doctors were doing their very best work. And yet you wouldn't stop there. You would also think of your friend as whole and healing and well and getting better, right? This is what I want to say to people. I want you to imagine that Syria. And even if you don't buy the book, go online and look up Syria Remember Me. You'll see some images at least. And there are a few stories. And go like, oh, those are Syrians? Wow, I didn't know. Or maybe if you're lucky enough to live in a neighborhood where some Syrians either have lived for decades or have recently arrived as refugees, then go and visit them and say, tell me a story and teach me to make hummus and do things that this is what I want to encourage. See a healing landscape.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Again.
No, that's perfect. Well, because I think it's, you know, it's part of our dynamic, you know, or our expanding repertoire. There is no one way or even one story. But so, yeah, where you guided us just then, which is perfect. And may all, you know, running into all oppressive, terrible things, rather than promote our reaction, may it be viewed as an opportunity for guiding. So it's not so much how, but what. And you just wove us and guided us right back into what.
Yeah, you know, and I want to, I'll give you a quote also. Again, this one comes from Amin Maalouf. I misspoke before when I said Mahmoud Darwish. He's actually Palestinian.
Right.
Amin Maalouf is Lebanese. And he says...
Oops, oh, we're going out. All right, but you got 30 seconds. Can you do it?
If we are to restore some hope to our disoriented humanity, we must go beyond a mere dialogue of cultures and beliefs toward a dialogue of souls.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Deborah Falmouth. We are intertwined inextricably in perpetuity, and as you said, thank goodness we like each other.
Alhamdulillah.
And thanks always to Timmy Oldenstedt in Washington, D.C., and the wonderful, wonderful KPFA Board Up crew. Thank you so much. This is Caroline Casey. We will reconvene next week on Standing Rock with Tricia Van Clavenen and Phyllis Young. Woof, 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 woof. Thank you.
This is Dennis Bernstein, host of Flashpoints.
This is Miguel Gavilan Molina, host and senior producer of Flashpoints.
Heard on KPFA every weekday from 5 to 6.
Flashpoints is a hard-hitting news magazine that monitors the centers of power and reports back to the people.
We bring community radio into the community and give voice to the voiceless, from occupied Palestine to the falsely accused on death row.
From the brown revolutions in the fields of misery to the front lines of the new labor and civil rights movement.
On Flashpoints, black and brown lives really do matter. So join us here on KPFA every weekday at 5 p.m. Thank you.
In this era of both despair and optimism generated by the massive mobilizations around the inauguration, what lessons can we draw from the successes and failures of organizing in the age of triumphant neoliberalism? Ramsey Kinnan was, as part of a loose-knit group of anarchists in Edinburgh, Scotland, instrumental in generating the biggest mass movement in British history, the anti-poll tax campaign, leading ultimately to the fall of Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher. He'll speak on Saturday, February 11th, at 6:30 at the Neville Proctor Library, 6501 Telegraph Avenue in Oakland. Wheelchair accessible, a benefit for Friends of PM.
Good afternoon. It is now 3 o'clock here at KPFA 94.1 FM in Berkeley, 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K24ABR in Santa Cruz, and